Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And if this is your first time watching or listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you would all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups and know that sharing my show and others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, education, and success is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, our guest today, Gopi Jita, is the founder of Leadership Parenting and a parenting coach and educational consultant for ISKCON Ministry of Education. She serves as the vice principal of TKG Academy, which is a private school in Dallas, Texas. She's also the founder of Bhakti Leadership Academy, where she and her team mentor teenagers throughout North America in leadership principles. Now, in the past 20 years, Gopi has served more than 1,000 children. Now, think about that for a minute. Served over 1,000 children and has mentored more than 500 parents and personally guided 100 educators. She's been trained in Waldorf and Montessori education and has a degree in child psychology. She grew up in temples in America and practiced bhakti yoga since childhood. She practices daily mantra meditation with her two older boys and her husband in Dallas. She loves singing, binging Netflix shows. So we're going to have to talk about that because I think I got that one too. cooking and drawing henna designs. She is grateful for every dramatic kid fight because that's how she practices to empower each child to leadership in every challenging interaction. And I love how, when I read that, I love how that was put because I think so many times each child fight we're afraid of, you know, it brings up a different feeling that we don't want to go to. And when I read that she is grateful for those, and I thought, because it does allow us to seize that opportunity to empower that child. So I want everybody to think about how that's worded, because I think it's very important. So Gopi, welcome to Answers Network.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. It's been just amazing connecting with you, and I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. And before we get into the book, share a little bit about yourself and what brought you to this point.
Yeah, there's so much there. Let's see. I am an educator, as you already mentioned. I was in the hospital with my 15-year-old son. He had just been hit with a brain tumor. He came home being unable to read. He had been reading since he was 3 years old. And it's interesting this is coming up right now because you were just before the show started asking about the seeker, that sage/king who's a seeker. And I was seeking. I was looking for the answers. I had already been working with parents and educators. I was the vice principal of a private school at that time. My son had already been accepted into dual credit courses in college at the young age of 14. It was like we had it made. Everything was going really well. And suddenly I went home one day, the night before he had been vomiting, throwing up. I thought it was a stomach bug. There was something in me that was like, this is a little different than a stomach bug. You know, call it mom's intuition. And I remember calling a few of my doctor friends, which I never do when there's just a stomach bug, right? We're all used to our kids having bugs. And I came home and he opened up his government text from the dual credit class and said, I can't, I don't know, mommy, what's happening? I can't read. It was 3 p.m. I'm like, how long has this been going on for? And he's like, since the morning. And I'm like, you didn't let me know. You didn't tell your dad, like, what's happening? And he thought, oh, I thought it would just, like, pass. So we raced to the hospital. And 2 days later, they showed us the scans, and it was a brain tumor. Hmm. The pain I felt in my heart as a mother at that time. And I'm no stranger to pain. But as a parent, the pain with the relationship of a child was more than anything I've ever experienced in my life. And suddenly I became really aware of the corridors and the women and men, the moms and dads sitting on the floor crying, just all around me, the parents. While the surgery was going on, it was a 12-hour surgery, and I was meditating. I meditate quite a bit. Our whole community had come in. My sister had flown in from India. Like, swamis and gurus were texting. Like, we had a ton of support. But I was really, really aware of the universal pain of parents at that time, how my mind had switched off, how just pouring a bowl of cereal milk during those 3 weeks had, you're pouring the milk and the milk is overflowing into the bowl of cereal. And that's what made me decide I need to use what I've learned and help serve. After that really like life-changing event, my son is doing okay. He's well, he's working, he's gotten, finishing up his degree, and the tumor was taken care of. But ever since that, it was like, why is this happening? Why has this happened? And that's when I made a real solid commitment to serving parents and stepped from education, I've been primarily in education, and added on the leadership parenting program, coaching clients, and wrote the book. And here we are now. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing how he's doing. It's so funny. It's as if you read my mind, because you paused for a moment and I was just about to ask how he's doing now. And then you said that and I went, I don't think I said that out loud. I said it in my head and you answered it exactly. So thank you for that, for sharing. In the book, one of the things that I pulled out of it was you talked about harnessing leadership principles. Now, obviously, you went through a very traumatic thing. And I don't know that necessarily what you were going through, that it was necessarily a leadership thing. But in your book, you talk about it quite a bit. How did you learn to harness these principles yourself? And then how did you make the connection to positive parenting?
Yeah, leadership is a very important part of education. We're guiding children. We're leading children into the future. Mm-hmm. I'm part of a group of thought leaders who are seeking to normalize leadership. I express in my introduction, leadership isn't about being the one in the front and bossing everyone around. And I went through that process of identifying what does being a leader to me the hard way, by making mistakes, by commanding teams without the personal relationship, without the personal connection. And we found that children who are raised with a proper understanding of leadership, leadership means humility and service. Leadership means valuing every single member of the team. The head of school at the St. Mark's school in Dallas, Colin Ego is, I believe, his name. He gave the best definition of leadership. Leadership is about making sure that the entire team is working together to meet a common goal. Raising a generation of children that aren't about me first, me first, me first. What's going to make me the most money? What's going to bring me the most success? Mm-hmm. But how am I going to serve my fellow neighbor? How am I going to connect so deeply with those around me that we can lift each other up together, collaborative versus competitive? Someone who truly understands that is the person who's going to stay back, like the parent who stays back at the end of the event to clean up all the chairs because they know that the main organizer might be exhausted. That's leadership. I'm actually here in LA for the Festival of the Chariots event that just happened at Venice Beach. Mm-hmm. And the president of the community, a guy snapped a picture of him and his wife. And his wife are literally taking down the tents. They're the ones that are putting on this massive festival, 5,000 to 10,000 people. They actually serve 20,000 plates in 4 hours. And the head of the entire festival is lifting up the tent poles and lifting up containers. And he and his wife are serving. That's mm-hmm. leadership, is service. And so the goal of leadership parenting is to help parents who are in leadership, who consider themselves community service or, you know, PTA moms and dads, leading teams, who work with others and value high productivity, to figure out how to help my kid. How do I help my child understand the true need of society, so when they grow up, they can step into who they're meant to be, and then they can assist others. And yeah, self-actualization, as is in Maslow's hierarchy. So the whole process, and I'm talking a lot here, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this,
but the whole process does this. It's so funny. I'm listening to you and I'm just synergizing so much that I'm enjoying it. I love the fact that you, in the book as well as now, refer to parenting as empowering future leaders. It's something that I've also spoken about in the past. I think it's so important. And in fact, one of the issues, or one of the things that I've brought up before, is one of the toughest things I think for a parent is to teach your child to lead, teach them to question authority when you are the authority. I think for many parents, that's one of the most difficult things, because they think that they're teaching their child not to listen to them. And that isn't the case at all. But if you can share some of the tools that you're bringing to parents that they may not already have, or that they have and they just haven't figured out how to use them, that has allowed them to then be able to more powerfully be a positive influence in their children's leadership development.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Alan. So we identify three core needs from the Bhakti tradition. The philosophy has been of leadership parenting has been taken from a small village in an area that is now in Bangladesh and India, where kings and queens reigned. And the three core needs are the needs of sambandha, connection and a belonging, the need of abhideya, free will and agency, and the need of prayojana, achievement and completion. And there's so many underlying qualities that develop when these needs are being met. Every conflict that we have with our kids, like your kid walks into the cafeteria with his lunch, or is about to get his lunch and has his lunch tray and doesn't know where to sit, because one group of kids that he used to be in with the in crowd there, they've shunned him. And the other group of kids, you know, we've all had that experience. Mm-hmm. And so that's a connection belonging need that's being messed with. That's the feeling of like, oh my God, do I matter? Am I worthy? Do I belong? And social empowerment stems from that being completely empowered in a child. How do I deal with this? What do I do in that situation? If you through the different strategies work to fulfill these three core needs, then a child feels like, I'm fulfilled. I got my, like, when I have conflict, I know what to do. When I have issues, I'm covered, and steps into the next level, which is dharma samadhi, or full purpose and absorption. When a child knows what they're meant for and they have a sense that I can internally conquer my own problems and fulfill my own needs, then they can seek to feel the needs of others. Understand, okay, their connection and belonging, maybe the words aren't going to be that, you know, for a seven-year-old, but they can understand. Now I can help someone else. Now I can take care of them. I can apologize when I've made a mistake. I can empathize. But if a child's internal needs aren't met first, then you can't expect them to go and serve another, take care of another, share. And I work with, on a daily basis, 5 to 7-year-olds. And I see this, like, in practice. I work with the parents. We guide the teachers at our school. And I'm with the children. And so I can see this in practice. I have a beautiful story to share with you. A little boy, let's call him Carl for now. And he's sitting on a chair with his friend, Roger, and they're putting together a card on the desk, and they're totally in creative mode. They've got scissors and pencils and they're working together on the desk. And suddenly Carl feels like there's not enough space here for me. So he asks Roger to scoot over. As Roger moves his little wooden Montessori chair over, plops down the foot on top of Carl's toe. Ooh. And Carl screams in pain. And as Carl whisks his leg out and kind of halfway falls, the scissors in his hand fly. Now, Carl's toe is like, you know, it's a pretty serious injury. The chair went right on it. And so I jump up, the assistant jumps up. We're like trying to help Carl and it's all happening so fast. And the scissors fly into Roger's face. You know, little 6-year-old boy who's already worried, oh my God, he hurt his friend. And now his scissors have been knocked into his nose. So as Carl is screaming in pain, he sees that his scissors have flown into Roger's face. And mid-scream, he pauses. Luckily, it was the blunt end of the scissors. Roger's okay, but Carl is in pain. And he sees that he's hurt his friend. And mid-scream, he stops. Are you okay, Roger? That right there is the purpose of leadership parenting, one of. When you're so settled in yourself that even though you're in pain, even as a 7-year-old, you can look to helping another that's in pain, even though the pain was caused by the person who's hurting now. And so that idea that fill your child's core needs so deeply that, yes, they will be in pain. Life is difficult. But even in their own pain, they have such a sense of these three core needs of connection and free will and achievement that even while they're in pain, they can help another. That is called true empathy, vadanya, which then moves into win-win, sangha. And then as John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, describes, win-win-win leadership. Not just I get what my needs met and you get your needs met, but hey, let's work together and figure out how we can help our community, help those around us, which is what I see you doing, Alan. When I read your story, when I listened to some of your shows, I was just like, whoa, this dude is in win-win-win leadership here. Not dude, forgive me for being disrespectful, but yeah. So that's what this is about. That's what leadership parenting is about.
Thank you. And we have a question. And again, I want to take the time to thank those that send in the questions. Some of them come in the night before because they've received the press release that comes out. They work in the middle of the day, so some they send them in ahead of time. Some come in right here in the middle of the show. But we have one here that says, what are some practical strategies to encourage open communication with my children who are now 8 and 10 years old and build a strong parent-child relationship which can positively impact their social development? This is from John in San Jose, California.
Hi, John. I'm in California today as well. So I'm so glad you're coming in with your question. Open communication. The first answer that comes to mind is model it here. Mm-hmm. Hearing is at the core of the Bhakti philosophy. There's the HEAR process that I share, H-E-A-R. It's in my book. H means hear completely, square your shoulders towards your child. When you can, try this 1 or 2 times a day. Life is really busy. So we're not telling you to change everything. But when your child comes to you with some emotion, or both of them come to you with emotion, take time to hear each one. So H stands for squaring your shoulders, putting your body language towards them, showing them that you have all of my attention. E stands for emotion. Find out what emotion are they feeling. They're frustrated, are they angry, are they sad, are they? And say, sounds like you're feeling really sad emotion. Now we're going to move their emotional space to their logical space with an action. H-E-A. A means action. Sounds like you're feeling really sad because your brother didn't let you have the time that you wanted on the computer. An action. So identify the emotion, identify the action, and that's how you respond reflectively. That's taken from empathic communication, nonviolent communication. It's a really simplified version of hearing our children's emotions. And it sounds super simple and it sounds super formulaic, but every single time my clients and me and the school teachers and the children start using this, the person that you're listening to comes to their own solution. They learn how to be empowered with their own solution. Our tendency is to just want to jump in and solve it all. But if you model this type of hearing with your children, they will start being able to come to their own solutions in their communication with each other. I have two boys, a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. We've had plenty of drama, plenty of arguments in our house. And if you continue to model this, then they will see that they can learn how to hear each other as well. So that's my quick answer. There's a lot more there, but hope that helps.
I think it helps a lot. And as you were saying that, you mentioned nonviolent communication. And at one time I was an instructor for the Crisis Prevention Institute, and we focused on nonviolent communication. But I also, what I got from you a little bit was a little bit of NLP as well, the neuro-linguistic programming. Do you incorporate NLP into your course?
Yes, I've been aware of it. And the course, it's interesting because the courses are based in the Bhakti path, which is like 3,000 to 5,000 years old. And it's got strands of all of these like psychological, modern, contemporary programs that are now being developed. And so it's quite exciting. But yes, neuro-linguistic programming is, I don't actually directly talk about it, but there's a lot of similarities there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about something that when I was doing more work with at-risk youth, especially working with teenagers, many of the parents were constantly trying to come up with a way to transform what they identified as defiance into a loving type of conversation. And many of them, I felt, I mean, it was a lot of it was more the way that they were responding rather than the actual defiance of the child. What do you tell a parent that starts with that concern?
The defiance.
Yeah.
When defiance comes in, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say what I recall was it was that, you know, no matter how it was put, the answer was every answer from the child was overflowing with defiance. In other words, if there was a way to be more defiant, that was their goal. And so they kept pulling the conversation away from any form of loving or way to come to any agreement or compromise.
I know that feeling. It's like everything you say, the kid has something against it. They're like, no, but, and yes. I don't want to, but, and no, I'm not going to, but, and it's like, you're trying to like be understood, but your child or, you know, the child in front of you is like saying the exact opposite. That's a messed up, abhidhaya. Free will and agency. Now, other parenting programs call it the control, the power bucket, the need for control. This child doesn't feel like they have free will and agency. I don't like using the word control. I know that human beings and children are not naturally looking to like lord it over others and control their environment and control others. We are naturally servants. We are naturally here for service. And so children who seem to be needing control and fighting and arguing and upset, like aggressive, they inside have something missing. They're missing their own sense of free will and agency. They don't know what they're, perhaps they've been shut down at school. Perhaps they're being too in the box and forced. Perhaps they haven't had the words to speak up about their needs. Whatever it may be, there are some really pretty cool and simple strategies to help a child feel a little bit more at ease. And then once their need is fulfilled, then conversations flow like magic. And what's so interesting is that they immediately start I want to say immediately because my clients find results like this. They immediately start wanting to do what the parent wants them to do. And it happens with my kids. You know, my kids are teenagers now. They're both adults, not teenagers anymore. They're 19 and 21. And so we went through that phase where of the teenage where they're separating out and it's going away from mom tells me to do something and now I'm going to do it to like, okay, mom, I know what I'm doing. And so I had to accept that this was a time period where they needed more free will agency, that core need needed to be like, I needed to step back and allow them that independence in that space. They're turning into, you know, they're becoming adults. And so knowing that defiance wasn't because they hated me and trying not to take it personally when my teenager is being defiant and accepting that, okay, this is a process and I need to allow for this process to take place. That was really powerful. So there's different stages of life where kids get more defiant. When they have that need, like arising a lot, there's simple strategies that you can apply to help it become peaceful. And whenever I apply those strategies, even now, of course, my boys know that I wrote a book and that I do this for a living. So mm-hmm. It's like I've tried to make it where it's not like an external strategy, but it's just a strategy of care and connection and hearing. And when they feel that I'm here to serve their needs, I'm not just here to boss them around. Right. Then not only the defiance gets neutralized, but now they're spending extra time on their own to check in on me. Hey, how are you doing? How can I help you? What do you need help with? So
I love the fact that you talk about the different stages. And you mentioned earlier that you were working with some 5 to 7 year olds. Let's talk a little bit about why it's important to deal with some of these things, such as defiance, why it's important to start at that younger age. I was speaking with a parent that was talking about their 15-year-old, and they were asking, they were looking for answers. And they said, I don't understand why he keeps sneaking out. He keeps doing this. If I've told him once, I've told him 100 times. And I said, maybe you don't need to be telling them 100 times, if since they were 5 years old, you've been telling them 100 times before you're serious, then by the time they're 15, why do you think that they're going to take the first no as something that they should do? And it sort of set them aback for a minute because they kind of thought about it. But so share with us a little bit, why is it important to start at an earlier age? Because, it certainly doesn't get easier when they're teenagers.
So, Alan, what jumps out at me about that question is, about the scenario, is that it's really frustrating as a mom when you're trying to give your kid instructions and they don't listen. It's frustrating on so many levels. You give the instructions to your children because you care for their well-being, not because you're just trying to make their life suck, And you know that there's important things that they need to do. As they're walking in the house and you want them to hang up their backpack on that hook and they keep throwing the backpack on the floor. You want them to put their bowl in the sink after they're done eating instead of having it leaving it at the table. You don't want them to be spending, 3 hours every evening playing video games when you know they have homework and they should prioritize their homework. And you keep telling them and you keep enforcing consequences. And we go from like wanting to be the nice, sweet mom or dad and reminding them peacefully and then getting really frustrated and like yelling. And, I just was talking to a parent who threw their kid's laptop because he was so upset. And so like that feeling, what happens to parents is that you get that continuous feeling of not being heard, of not being heard, of not being valued, of not being important, and it messes with you. And as the years go by, you become more reactive because you're now in a relationship where you don't know how to get your needs across, and your needs aren't even your needs. Your needs are your child's needs, that you're trying to raise this child to be the best human being possible, and your needs are not being met because he's not following instructions or the child's not following instructions.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We're talking about the book Leadership Parenting. It's Empower Your Child's Social Success. We're talking with the author, Gopi Gita. We're going to take a break. If you know anybody that has been telling you lately, oh man, I don't know what I'm going to do with my teenager, we're going to take a break. Contact them. Have them tune in and listen to the rest of the show. We'll be back in 1 minute and 15 seconds.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practiced lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network, and we're talking about leadership parenting. When we went to break, one of the things we said was, if you know somebody, have them listen in. You can also have them get the book. I found that there is an incredible amount of information that kind of walks people through different scenarios. So Gopi, let's talk a little bit about the book. And as you were putting it together, how did you envision parents being able to go through this and kind of get to the place that they wanted to get some help? And you mentioned earlier about the fact that some of them are talking about how great they feel because they're getting immediate help. Share a little bit about how that happens.
Yeah, leadershipparenting.com goes to gopigita.com. We're in the middle of building out the leadershipparenting.com website, but go ahead and download your free copy there and connect with me if you find that your kids are having a difficulty with friendships at school or friendships at home, if they're pendulum swinging between loving somebody and then like can't stand them, and the, you know, seven-year-old's like, I'm not going to invite you to my birthday party, and the pain, you know, the pain we feel when our kids are like, don't have clear and easy friendships, your teenager is sullen and in her room and just totally changed. We all experience this, and leadership parenting has the answers for you. The immediate successes are when we apply the strategies, the simple strategies, and parents start seeing the relationships changing. When mom and dad's relationship is more fortified with a child, then they can take that energy, that strengthened energy, to help the relationships in the other world and in with their friendships. And I got a text. I get texts like every other day. I'm on calls every day with clients every evening. And I just got a text as I came into LA with a picture of Dr. Vasu. She's one of my clients in Columbus, Ohio. Her daughter with her friends and having a sleepover when, you know, half a year ago, it was the opposite. And so immediately the strategies, if you apply them and you've got the heart, they work immediately. The program is a 3 to 4 month program, and you find change within the first 2 to 3 weeks. 100% Alan of clients have been finding success within 2 to 3 weeks. I'm like, it's phenomenal, Alan, for me to even be speaking these words, because I didn't realize how powerful this process was. 100% of clients have so far been finding success within 3 to 4 weeks, identifying where they want to be and finding massive shifts, massive transformation.
You know, you just mentioned about the feeling that you get when you get that text. And I just want to share with everybody out there, if you have someone that has done something that has made a positive difference in your life, send them that text, send them that email, or pick up the phone and make that call. Because that's why we do what we do. I mean, it is that feeling. And there's a story that I tell from many, many years back, but just a young man that I transported 3 times. And he called on Thanksgiving to say that they're sitting around the table talking about what they're thankful for. And he started the conversation with, you probably don't remember me because it's been so long. And I went, oh, I remember you. It's not many people I transported 3 times. Mm-hmm. But you know, that story still sticks with me, and it's many, many years ago. And just saying it now out loud, I feel good. So that's another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others, is share those stories, share those feelings when somebody does something that you come away and go, wow, that really made a difference in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that you say that. Is we forget to do that, especially with our kids. We're so, it's natural. Life is busy. You know, like I'm a busy mom. I'm a working mom. I've got a few different, areas where I lead. And when I see my kid, if the first thing I'm thinking, because I'm stressed out, we end up being our very natural raw selves around our children, because there's so much love flowing there that we just we open it all up, even all the negativity. And the first thing we see is fix your shirt. Why is your shoes on? Why are your shoes on wrong? What's up with your hair? Why did you put your shoe upside down over there? Can you place your shoes properly? The first, with the people that are immediately around us, it's natural and normal. And that's why we need to be aware of it. I ask clients to observe their interactions and first center yourself before you transition. We do a lot of meditative techniques and affirmations, mantra affirmations. Center yourself, consciously live, and then when you speak to someone else, there's a strategy called the love boost. You're aware of what they're bringing to the world, not what they're taking away from it. What they are doing right, what they are offering, instead of, rejecting them for what they're doing. And so I'll tell a really fun story. I love the story. I think I might tell it too much, but every time I tell it, I just love telling it. My 16-year-old son, I've asked him to, I don't remember exactly how old he was, but I've asked him to do the dishes. And we had a busy, busy month. And the dishes are piling up. They were piling up for 2 days. Second day, I'm like, oh my God, I'm ready to lose it. I don't like seeing dirty dishes in the sink. And, we cook a lot in the family. So it's not just eating dishes, it's pots and finally, he's, busy too. He's high school and kids' lives are packed. Mm-hmm. And so finally he comes down with his, ear pods or whatever, and he's listening to something and in the zone, in the kitchen at 10 o'clock at night, spends an hour cleaning everything up. And he's lined up all the dishes on the rack on the side of the sink and heads back upstairs. And I hear that he's heading back upstairs to his room. I come out the kitchen and I see that, wow, he did it. And I'm feeling grateful inside. But as I get a little closer, I see that there's crud in the middle of the sink. The draining thingy hasn't been thrown out. And I see that the dishes, that there's still some soap suds on some of the bigger pots. He didn't get immediately all the pieces, all the parts. And I'm at 11 o'clock at night, I raise my voice. I can have a pretty loud voice. I'm a singer. And so, Nitai! I call him down. His name is Nitai, beautiful name. And he hears me from upstairs and he comes bounding down the stairs. And you can tell a groan when your kids are 5 and the way they run and you hear their feet. And then when they turn 15 and they're fully getting taller than you and they're bounding down the stairs, okay, that's him coming down. And as I hear him coming down, I realize that he's excited to come down. I'm about to rip him a new one. He made me wait 2 days. There's stuff in the sink. There's soap suds on the top. I want to frustratingly communicate to him that he didn't do a good job. Of course, I'm a parenting coach and I'm the vice principal of school, and this is not the way I'm supposed to be thinking. And so as he comes down to the sink, I flip it. I realize I'm the wrong one here. He just spent an hour completely absorbed in doing my pots, which technically from the traditional house that I was raised in, it's my job. And so I flip it and I say, I noticed that even though you're busy, you spent a full hour, even though it's late at night and you, cleaned all the dishes and they're so neatly lined up. I noticed the detail. That's part of the love boost, verbally record the details. That's the V-L-O-V-E. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me sheepishly, goes into the sink, knows that he didn't finish, empties out that stuff on the drain, in the drain. When you notice, you're saying, positive stuff, when you notice what a child is doing, it's not necessary for grandiose, wow, you're amazing, you're fantastic, you're perfect, superlatives. You don't need them. You just need to notice what your child is doing every day. I see you. I see that you lifted up the bags from the car, even though I didn't ask. It shows that you're responsible. I see that you didn't yell back when you wanted to, when your sister was yelling at you. I see that it's like catching a child in success.
Yes.
The nurture heart approach. And it's so powerful. It's just so powerful. Just try it once a day and it changes and shifts so much. So
I'm having a horripilation. The hair is standing up on the back of my neck. This is so great.
I love that. So that the horripilation, I didn't know the term. In the bhakti culture, there's called there's 8, I believe, ecstatic symptoms of like pure divine love and ecstasy. And one of them is hair standing on the back of the hair standing on end on your body.
There you go.
That's amazing.
A couple of things that I thought of, but one had to do with many years ago when my kids were smaller. We are on the cover of a book series for the Kamehameha schools in Hawaii, and called "Catch Them Doing Something Good." And it was something that I had coined, and when I was a room dad, we talked about it. But we focused on, everything was focused on catch them doing something good. And that was what I was feeling when you were doing that, is that you still caught him doing something good and you focused on that. And that was so great. And then the other thing, and I was looking at the time, we've only got about 8 minutes. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the academic motivation, because you talk about it in your book. And so many parents said there's so much stress and stuff. They feel like, you know, we have to focus on this. We have to focus on this. But I just read a study where praising effort over achievement led to higher achievement on the children's very next assignment. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. That's this love boost. It's identifying, like, seeing what a child is spending their energy on and their time on. They feel noticed. They feel that they matter. Most of us as human beings have not been seen. We don't feel we matter. We don't feel we belong. And starting that in childhood by noticing what they're doing, a child who's working really hard on their math problems and struggling and has spent like 15 minutes trying to figure out that particular word problem, the tendency is to like, oh my God, why is this taking you so long? Do you not understand the concept? How many times do I have to teach you the concept? We focus so much on the outcomes in this world, on the end result, that we forget about the process. And I'll tell you a story, a little six-year-old boy, another beautiful, beautiful kid of mine, one of my students, he's grown now, but he was coloring and drawing, early writing, first grade writing class. And they've got words that they're using and they're writing sentences and drawing pictures to go with their sentences. So he's come up to me and he says, I see a lion at the zoo. And he's got a picture that he has drawn of a lion. And so it's, you know, a little first grade lion. And he's still working on it. So he came to ask me for the proper spelling of lion, and we give them predictive spelling. And so then he goes back to his desk to continue the work. And suddenly I look over and he's scribbling over. He has a pencil drawing of a lion and he's scribbling over really, really, really hard the entire picture of the lion. It's not good enough, I think, in my head. He doesn't like what he's doing. And the tendency of a teacher is to immediately say, why are you scribbling on your paper? You had such a beautiful line drawing. Like, don't do that. Like, stop scribbling on your paper. But I pause and I remember, it's not about the end goal. It's about the process. What is he doing here? And I ask him, so what happened? You don't like that? You don't like the lion picture? And he says, no, I'm at the zoo and there's a wall between me. You know, he's a little kid, he's still figuring out, is an English second language, still figuring out how to communicate to me what he's trying to say, what's going on in his head. So I just listen patiently, the whole hear process, just focusing in on him. And he communicates to me that he's trying to put a wall between him and the lion because he was in the picture, in the moment, realizing that he's at the zoo and there's a lion in front of him and the lion's probably going to hurt him or eat him. He needs a wall there. And so the scribbling is him putting a wall in front of him and the lion. If I would have done what teachers and parents tend to do, which is jump to the end goal, the outcome, this 100% percent, this 80%, this 90% that I expect mm-hmm. of my child, and not asked about his process, I would have never known that this was him working through getting to that end goal and knowing that he needs to stay alive in this picture with the lion. And so then we discussed it some more. Is there another way we could do this? Because you did draw a really pretty lion with like cool ears and the mane was so powerful. And so then he decides that he can get two pieces of paper and tape one on top of the other. And this can be the wall, and underneath the wall can be the lion. But instead I focused, you know, like we focus on that. So academic achievement is about being in the process. And this is chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11 in my book, being okay to be aware of the process of learning and noticing the details of the process of learning, not just thinking about that end result. We look at our report, the kids' report cards, and we judge them according to their report cards. In our school, I'm the vice principal of TKG Academy, which is a really, really powerful private school in Dallas. And in our school, we focus on developing intrinsic motivation through developing the process more than developing the end goal. And so I love that question. And this, through this, is how we work with our clients in stepping their kids into academic success.
Well, I want to share with everybody that your book also emphasizes the importance of nurturing children's spiritual development and encouraging yes. their active participation in religious and community-based activities. And this is something that I wholeheartedly agree with. We've only got about 2 minutes, so please share with us or with the audience, you know, why you believe this is so important.
We are all here for a purpose, a reason. You are here. Whoever's listening, Alan, and everyone who's listening, you're here in this world for a reason. I know it's hard to believe, like we don't know why we're here. But in addition to that, your children and the people that you're in touch with, and especially your kids, have been brought to work through and grow together. And when there's disconnect, it can make you feel even more lost and confused as to, oh my God, why am I a mom or a dad? But when you work with internal meditative practices, we specifically ask for the clients to do breath work and mantra meditation. The three words we use in mantra meditation are Hare, Krishna, and Rama. And they work on your feelings of your needs of Sambandha, Videha, and Prayojana, your connection, belonging, achievement and completion, free will and agency. And when you have all of that working together internally, you're seen, you matter, by the most powerful entity in creation, God, the universe, nature, whatever you want to call that being, that divine being. We call them, it's a man and a woman, it's a female and a feminine and masculine counterparts of God. And when you are seen like that, and when you help your child be seen like that, the sky is the limit as to what you can do.
Everybody, you're listening to Gopi Gita. She is talking about leadership, parenting, and so much more. I suggest you check out her website. You can go to gopigita.com/parent. You can get social with her on Instagram. It's instagram.com/leadershipparenting, or you can go to her Facebook page. Again, I highly recommend the book. I'm so looking forward to us meeting a little bit later on today. This has been wonderful. And for everybody out there.
Leadershipparenting.com. Now it's at leadershipparenting.com. Go check it out.
Okay. Yes. And if you're driving out there and you couldn't write any of that stuff down, if you go to the answers.network, we'll make sure that we have all of this information on the show notes. So, Gopi, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for taking the time to make a positive difference in the lives of others.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. And for everybody out there, be with us next week, because we're going to be joined by Mark Schechter, and he's going to discuss his new book, Think. Okay. I heard somebody recently saying, you better start thinking, because they're going to make that illegal too. The book is called Think, 8 Steps to Ignite Your Creative Genius in Business. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network, or you can just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube if you want to see us, Rumble, Spreaker, and many other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. Know that we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.